If there's one thing we've learned about business and life, it's that people are the X factor. They constantly surprise us, both in amazing ways and not so much. We're Ben and Sia, and welcome to the Gnaw on This Business Bites podcast. This show is all about real life things we all deal with every day, how they relate to business, and how to make some sense out of our daily chaos. Welcome to the show. And welcome back to another episode of Gnaw on This Business Bites. I'm Ben, and this is Sia. Now, we got asked a question the other day. How do you maintain culture and brand as you grow? The short answer, you don't. Your brand and your culture changes as you evolve. As you as a company evolve, as you grow, as you expand, as different people come into your organization, your brand and your culture changes. It may be slight. It may seem insignificant. But as soon as you bring new people into the organization, as soon as you go from being this feisty little startup that had two people in it with barely a nickel between you and you don't have your MVP yet to all of a sudden making money and actually having real clients, your brand has changed. It's evolved. And so is your culture. So we need to look at it that way. We need to look at the as people and companies and organizations as they grow, how do we maintain the best parts of our brand? How do we maintain the best parts of our culture and allow those to expand and accentuate while realizing that we're never going to be what we originally were? Because like everything else, the world changes, people change, you change. So why doesn't your brand and your culture change? Sia, let's gnaw on this.
Hoo-wee. Let's think of all the popular brands we know and love. Disney.
Nike. Okay. Apple. Nike, Netflix.
HP I worked for. IBM.
Blockbusters. There we go. We'll look at Blockbusters. Everybody remember Blockbusters?
Hey, there's still one left, man.
I think it went under. I think the original Blockbusters are the last remaining holdout. I think it finally went under. Somebody's going to have to fact check me on that, but I think it actually went under.
It's the one in Washington, right?
We'll have to check that. I'm not really sure, but somebody told me a rumor that actually had gone under.
No, the pandemic probably killed it.
Might have.
Probably. Could be. Right. But hey, here's the deal, kids. As we all know this too well, right? Times change, tastes change, priorities change, everything changes, needs change, desires change. What you thought you wanted in life, like dating, is not what you really get or really want.
Well, that was a different conversation altogether.
Yeah, I totally just ADD going, God, could you imagine if I like married the kid that I dated when I was 16, like, holy crap. Actually, who's a very nice person. Still hates my guts, but still a very nice individual. But no, I mean, yes. Okay. So when you are a startup or if you are a younger company, right? There's going to be that very human. It's very human led a lot of times when you're starting a business, right? Because it's passion that fuels you working 24 hours a day, right? Maybe getting 15 minutes of sleep. So 23.75 hours a day working, right? But I think the big challenge, and again, small business that I am right now, I'm still in startup mode in a lot of different ways. I am bringing on people, but I do know this, the more people you bring in, the more different flavors. It's like seasoning. You keep adding seasoning to that spaghetti base, you know, sauce. It's going to change up the flavor. It's still spaghetti, people.
But it's never going to taste like the original sauce.
I mean, unless the core base of that sauce, like the tomato paste, for example, is always fundamentally there and you add the seasonings, it's still going to have that tomato sauce.
Absolutely.
It's just the way it may be projected outwardly could be like wine. Oh, let's talk about wine instead of spaghetti. Like, think about wine. Like, it's the same grapes, but every season it's nurtured slightly differently. There's going to be different, like, you know, climate issues. Maybe there's, you know, catastrophic earthquake or fire, California, you know, things of that nature.
Is the soil dry? Is the soil wet? All sorts of things.
But it's still called wine.
Yes.
And it's still called,
you know, from that vineyard.
Yep. It's just that year. I know this topic. I think I'm taking it in that one direction, but another direction I'd like to say this is no matter how hard you try to maintain that base of your wine or spaghetti or whatever, if you don't adopt or accept that or have flexibility to that change to accommodate, that's where it starts to self-destruct, where now you're fighting against that you added maybe too much basil or salt, you know, counteract it with something else. If you go overboard, then it starts to like kill the product overall. I keep going back to spaghetti. I must be hungry.
Yeah. I mean, you take a look at brands. Take a look at brands like McDonald's. And McDonald's, as ubiquitous as the brand is, the 36,000 stores around the world or whatever there is today, there still is regional nuances within the brand. You know, if you go to McDonald's in Portugal versus the McDonald's in Japan versus McDonald's in Singapore versus the South versus the North, there are regional differences.
Yeah.
They're all part of the same brand. You still have the golden arches. You still can sit there and say to all beef patties, special sauce, lettuce, cheese, pickles, onions on a sesame seed bun. But they don't all act and react exactly the same. It's all the same basic culture. It's all the same basic brand, but it's the regional, you know, specialties and spices that make it interesting. And how do the people react? How do the what's customer service like in New Orleans versus Los Angeles versus New York? You know, what's a downtown McDonald's different from one out in a very rural area? You know, they're all the same McDonald's, but the culture changes and the brand changes based on the people that you meet. And unless you can take 150, you know, how many employees are there? Might be a million employees across McDonald's worldwide. And unless you could take them and turn them all into some automatons, which you never can, you're never going to have that perfectly consistent brand message everywhere that you are. And I think that as business owners, we need to embrace the sameness and, you know, the cores of our culture, but we also need to be able to live with the fact that there are going to be nuances and differences.
I mean, look, what really worries me about this adherence of, but our company culture, we're so familiar, it was always this way. I know at one point when I worked at HP, this is like back at 2007, 2008, is actually when I joined the company. When I was a kid, my I had so many family friends that worked at HP, right? And it was known, you know, Hewlett Packard was a family driven company. It always was.
Hewlett and Packard in the garage. Everybody knew the story.
And I was shocked. Even in 2008, I felt it. I could feel it. As big of a company as it was, I could still feel the vibe, just the way the management level, just the way everyone spoke with one another. There was a lot of that familial sense. And then it started to shift. So by the time I came on board, it was definitely like getting more competitive in the space, right? And I could sense that if HP did not, I'm not saying shed, but it was so stuck on the, oh, we're family. I'm like, man, the reality of it is you're not family. Mm-hmm. There were colleagues of mine who got paid 6X to sell a competitor product versus our product. So you think my own colleagues want to do any business with me? I had to sell into my own freaking business, you know, colleagues to tell them, hey, can you push our product into your client's, you know, account? Otherwise we'll be there by ourselves, right? And then they would get mad at us going, why are you in this account? Get out of our account. And I'm like, it's my account, guy. Like, I got to sell it. So it started to become more competitive. And it just happened to be, that's just the way it happens. Some people say that there was some lost luster to it. And by the way, not just HP, like a lot of other tech type businesses really went down that path. Is it good, bad, or ugly, or indifferent? I don't know. It is matching the need for our demand of technology today, though. So maybe it was a change that needed to happen.
Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be cognizant of that. It says, when is it time to embrace the culture and hold tight? And when is it time to let it go?
And I think core values. Yeah.
It comes down to core values. I think the core value should always remain the same. The core value should always say, you know, if you truly believe in customer experience, you always believe in customer experience. If you truly believe in your people, you truly believe in your people. They can't just be words on a page. They have to be things that you live. If you truly believe in utilizing the best technology to solve problems that the customers have, then that's what your core values are. However, you're going to find parts of your culture that were relevant in the 1980s that in 2024 are no longer relevant. You're going to have parts of your brand, you know, your core, which is truly your core essence, that evolves because the brand has evolved, the market has evolved, the customers have evolved, the stakeholders have evolved, the market has evolved. And if you remain stagnant, you're going backwards. You're not staying still, you're just going backwards. So we as companies and we as organizations need to sit there and say, what are the things that are important to us to hold on to because they are the essence of what makes us different, what makes us unique, and what makes us valuable? And what are the things that we're holding on to for strictly tradition's sake that no longer add value to us or customers or our stakeholders?
So let's challenge each other on this. Who do you think is doing it well?
I think in some cases, I would say Nike has evolved very well. I think Nike has done a very good job of evolving over the years. I would say Pepsi hasn't. I would say that Pepsi is stuck in the 1980s and their marketing, their advertising, their brand, their thought process is just absolutely stuck and is no longer relevant in today's world. People who are Pepsi drinkers are going to hate me, but as somebody who actually looks at marketing and advertising and branding dispassionately, I don't see that there's been any evolution in their brand. But I think there are brands out there that are doing everything they can to remain relevant and evolve as the time goes on. Netflix has evolved. Netflix is now a media company. You know, they are their own media empire because that's what was expected of them. That's what where they naturally had to move on to. 3M's product line and 3M's brand has as tried and true as it is, has diversified itself to be able to be relevant in more marketplaces. So they've expanded their brand. I don't think they've contracted from the brand. I think they've expanded their brand. So I think there's a lot of organizations out there that are good representations of being able to sit there and say, okay, what worked for us in 2019 no longer works for us in 2024. And we're not our grandfathers or our father's Oldsmobile.
I mean, you've seen that graphic, right? Where it shows the evolution of the top, 20 companies or top 10 companies over the years. And it's all tech now. It's all tech.
Yeah.
And I think that's a sign of the times.
Well, the question is, are the top 10 brands, that's strictly a revenue number. I don't know if that's brands as in how brands are trusted. I don't know. I think it's strictly a revenue number. And a lot of it has to do with tech brands, especially the software brands. There's a far higher margin on that type of product. So I'm not really sure that's a true representation of brands. I think that's a true representation of economics.
I think there's another one, though, that was brand recognition, like logo recognition.
Okay.
Like it, and that's where I think I'm going to go back. And anyone that's in the chat, by all means, please add the link because heaven knows I ain't doing it right now. but yeah, I think, again, it should not be lost on anybody though. Like you mentioned Pepsi, for example, to me, they are very diverse in their products, right? So there's a lot more products that they have under their umbrella, that subsidiary group that we don't even know about, right? Or think about. But
that's the brand problem.
It's a consumer.
To me, that's how is the brand perceived? The brand is perceived as Pepsi Cola. It's not perceived as a, it's not a General Foods. It's not a Procter and Gamble where you see in your mind's eye, the diversity of the brand. Most people, when they think Pepsi Cola, think of Pepsi Cola.
Yeah. Or competitors of Coke, right? No, I have to be very careful because they are literally down the street from us. So like, hey, shout out my peeps. What's up? No, but I think that goes back to, I don't know anything about their, okay, let me just say this, reverse it, strike that, say it one more time, which is this. PepsiCo, as you mentioned, is a consumer-based product, right? Yes. And like Coca-Cola did an amazing job. I don't want to keep comparing the two, but let's just call it for what it is. Coca-Cola did an amazing job campaign after campaign with imagery that connects you. And so therefore we have this assumption because of the way their advertising worked that the company culture would have that kind of same vibe. Absolutely. Right? So Coca-Cola, we think of like, oh, beautiful, like polar bears, you know, during the holidays.
It's emotionally driven. Coca-Cola is an emotionally driven brand.
And they had Coke in it. So I'm sure it evoked a lot of emotion for a lot of people. But, you know, but they did do a good job of keeping relevance in the 70s. They were, you know, into the hippy dippy. I'd like to bring the world a Coke, yes. Right? The fact that they would have it was such a big deal to get Coke into Russia and to China. Mm-hmm. I mean, then now it was almost like a broadened, like as a representation of capitalism or success of capitalism, right? But as a company, Coca-Cola, I would be very interested to see if anyone from there could say, yeah, heck yeah, that is part of our core drive and culture. You know, we're cool. You know, granted, we know there were missteps, the whole new Coke debacle.
Yeah. And there's a new one happening right now and we could go on a whole new subject on this, and we probably should wrap this thing up. But there's the new Coke that's happening right now with the spiced Coke, and who knows where that's going to do it and if whether that's going to be a debacle or not. But people keep coming back to Coke because they believe in the core brand, and they believe that the brand is one that can be trusted. It's one that can be liked, one that is valued. And I think that as corporations, we need to sit there and say, are we remaining relevant to our core audience? Are we speaking in such a way that we're being listened to, understood, and valued by those people that actually reach into their pocket and trade their dollars for our product or service? And we need to be aware of that. And are we being seen as a brand that is relevant to the people that we care about and who care about us?
I agree. Also, though, we have to emphasize the fact that this is about the people who are in that company too, that make it too. Absolutely. Right? And so no matter how big or small a company is, you do have a culture, even if it's a culture of two people in your startup. Okay. Do write it down, write it down, what your core vision, because as you grow and you bring more people on, do they align to that? Do they agree with you on that? Because if they don't fundamentally agree that you say, hey, man, this company is pure Niners territory, don't even think about bringing any other team in the mix, you know, you probably should write that down then if that's that important. Absolutely. To you,
right? As the expression goes, and I'm going to leave it at this, is your brand is only as valuable as your unhappiest employee on their worst day. And I think that we need to realize that our culture is about our people. And if we're not taking care of our people, then they're not going to be excited about our brand, and they're not going to become the brand ambassadors and the brand champions that we need to build other brand champions and ambassadors.
I agree, sir.
So let's leave it there. I'm Ben.
And I'm Sia.
And we'll see you soon.
Hey, hey, hey. Thanks for listening to another episode of Not On This, Business Bites. If you liked what you heard, we most humbly ask that you like, share, and hit that subscribe button. And if you want to communicate more effectively within your organization, contact Ben at yourbrandmarketing.com or me at brilliantbeammedia.com. We can help you build your community, brand awareness, and personality through digital content and podcasting. We cannot wait to hear from you. So see you next week for another episode of Not On This, Business Bites.